as the 2016 race tightens, new voting restrictions such as fewer polling sites and reduced early voting could make all the difference in states such as North Carolina. For example, take Democratic-leaning Guilford County. The county reduced the number of places to vote during the first week of early voting from 16 to 1. So this year, only about 3,000 people voted there in the first days of early voting.
And I think he's got a surprise or two that you're going to hear about in the next few days. I'm talking about some pretty big surprise. We're not going to go down, and we're certainly not going to stop fighting. We've got a couple things up our sleeve that should turn this around.
America is perilously close to, you know, to a failed state. Here we are, this rich, sophisticated country where everything works pretty well, and we have a government that is almost incapable of functioning and ain't going to get better. I mean, a lot of this has to do ultimately with the polarization of the public, the fact that we have Republican districts where they don't really fear losing in the general election. They only fear being overthrown by even crazier people in a primary. So, no, I don't know how this changes.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, it's 5:10, and today is the fourth day of November 2016. It's Dave Plyer in for Steve Grzanich. One final day this week here on The Opening Bell on 720 WGN, keeping the Chicago Cubs in the conversation this morning. The Cubs, of course, will be celebrating their victory today with a parade and event in Wrigley Field and Grant Park. We'll be carrying all of it here on 720 WGN. Ratings for Game 7 were also released yesterday. It was the most watched baseball game for Fox since Game 7 of the 2001 World Series. Outside of the presidential debates, the game was also the most watched telecast since February's Super Bowl. The game drew a 51.2 rating in the Chicago market and a 71 share, meaning 71% of all televisions in use in Chicago were tuned into the game. No doubt there. Ben Zobrist, I got to tell you, he might have heard, he won more than the World Series trophy and the MVP award on the night of the game. Chevrolet handed him the keys to a limited edition Chevy Camaro convertible after his late game heroics. The free car comes with a price, though. The IRS will consider the Camaro a taxable prize. Taxes are calculated using his federal income tax rate. Top rate's 39.6%, the fair market value of the car. Based on the suggested retail value, taxes would total up to about $20,000. But don't worry about Ben, folks. He received a four-year, $56 million deal that reportedly paid him about $10 million this year. The deal also included a $2 million signing bonus. So I think we're okay there. Daylight saving time ends this weekend, and after this week, I think we all need that extra hour of sleep, and if that comes, of course, Saturday night into Sunday morning. On the program this morning, we'll hear from Opening Bell contributor Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management with the week in business. And a little later in the broadcast, we'll spend some time with Edward Conard. He's the New York Times bestselling author, American Enterprise Institute visiting scholar, and former Bain Capital partner. He's got a new book out, and it's called The Upside of Inequality: How Good Intentions Undermine the Middle Class. And we'll do that after the news at 5:30. All that is coming up after we check the WGN Associated Bank market desk this morning. Dow futures pointing down, S&P and NASDAQ also pointing down in Asia, and all the Europe indices finished off down as well. Oil prices were on course for their sixth straight day of falls, dragged lower by a surge in U.S. crude inventories. Timid demand and doubts over the ability of producers to coordinate output cuts. The dips put crude on the longest losing run since June, and before that, since January, with Brent shedding almost 14% since its recent peak in mid-October. We've got some business news happening around the world yesterday and overnight. CVS Health Corp said it would cut about 600 jobs, mostly at corporate offices in Rhode Island, Illinois, and Arizona over the next 2 months, citing an increasingly competitive environment. The drugstore chain operator, which is expected third quarter results next week, employs more than 240,000 people in the United States. Crane Chicago Business is reporting the financial condition of Seaway Bank and Trust, Chicago's largest black-owned bank, has deteriorated to the point where the institution is at risk of failure, even as the bank expresses confidence an investor rescue will happen. China's Dalian Wanda Group has spent $1 billion to acquire Dick Clark Productions, the TV company that produces the Miss America pageant and the Golden Globe Awards. Wanda's push into the U.S. entertainment industry has led to calls from some American lawmakers for greater scrutiny of Chinese investment amid concerns about creative freedom and the promotion of Chinese propaganda. Wanda already owns AMC Theaters and bought Legendary Entertainment for $3.5 billion in January. It also announced a movie partnership in September with Sony Pictures. The Paris Agreement to combat climate change becomes international law today, a landmark demonstrating that countries are serious about tackling global warming amid amid growing fears that the world is becoming hotter, faster than scientists expected. So far, 96 countries, accounting for just two-thirds of the world's greenhouse gas emissions, have formally joined the accord, which seeks to limit global warming to 2 degrees Celsius. Many more countries are expected to come abroad in the coming weeks and months. And it's time for our regular contributor, Paul Nolte, with Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. He has the pulse of what's going on in the world of business. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning, Dave.
Interesting week. Many earning reports released. What are some of the highlights?
You know, it's interesting when we talk about the earnings. When you take a look at corporate earnings, they always talk about beating expectations.
Of course.
And so the expectations get pushed down so that I can beat those expectations. So they talk about the beat rate. And that beat rate has been running at about 60-65% or so. And that's seen as a good thing. But when you take a look at the actual numbers and compare them to what they were a year ago, earnings are up a little bit, and it's helped by the energy sector because energy prices had fallen so far last year. We're now lapping that. One of the things that we take a look at, though, is the revenue number. How much did they earn top line? And those revenue numbers are coming in at about 2%, maybe 3%. So it's very hard to get significant earnings growth when you're not able to generate more revenue. And part of the reason why we're starting to see an awful lot of merger activity, and we saw a lot of it announced this week. I buy your firm. We get rid of a bunch of people, and we right-size the company. We make more money that way, and that's what we're starting to see. So it's very difficult to get organic growth. It's coming from merger activity.
Dave Plyer and for Steve Grzanich here on the opening bell on the WGN Associated Bank market desk this morning. We are following some stocks after some earning reports came out yesterday. Starbucks reported higher than expected quarterly revenue on Thursday as solid results from the U.S.-dominated Americas region bucked a trend of a broader restaurant slump and soothed concerns that intense competition would impact the world's best-known coffee store. Starbucks gets the bulk of its sales from the United States, where it and other restaurant chains have been battling heady competition. Unusually low grocery prices and anxiety over the rough-and-tumble U.S. presidential contest. Total revenue rose to $5.71 billion from $4.91 billion, topping the average expectations of $5.68 billion. Shares of the world's largest coffee chain were up 1.6% in after-hours trading. ADM traded up at $47.43 a share. Boeing traded down. Groupon up at $3.94 a share. And Kraft Heinz traded down.
Wall Street Now. Unemployment claims up by 7,000 to a seasonally adjusted 265,000, the highest since early August. Still overall, just over 2 million Americans collecting unemployment checks, fewest since June of 2000, down more than 7% from a year ago. The news comes ahead of today's jobs report. Many analysts expecting it'll show 175 jobs added in October. The IRS saying the number of people who reported phone tax returns filed in their name fell by more than half this year, the IRS cracking down on tax-related identity theft. Beginning next year, Chase customers will have the option of paying via their smartphones when shopping at Walmart. The world's largest retailer will add the Chase Pay feature to its Walmart Pay app. Digital payment apps can help speed checkout lines, which have been slowed down recently due to the new higher security chip-based credit cards. Some caffeinated earnings from Starbucks, beating the streets, reporting a 23% rise in profits for its fourth quarter. Dave Packer, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
And we're talking to Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management on the week in business. Now, there has been a slight economic boom leading up to the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series, but it's not quite like when a city hosts a Super Bowl.
No, it's not. Certainly for the city of Chicago, we've kind of shut everything down starting at about 7 o'clock or so the other night when first pitch went on. But when you're talking about the Super Bowl, you're talking about a week-long event leading up to it, a lot of activity, a lot of people coming into town. The fact that it all happened in Cleveland, certainly a boon for Cleveland. We got the weekend part of the series, and that helped out an awful lot around the Chicago area. Today, I think, will be kind of a slow business day in general for a lot of people working in and around the city, though.
A big distraction, and I got to assume, I'm a small business owner myself, that it's going to cause some serious productivity losses throughout the day.
Yeah, you're going to be focused on the TV or the computer or whatever. It won't be on business.
You know, the Cubs tweeted an official excuse note before Wednesday's game. I'm assuming they're going to do something similar today. It was, please excuse blank from class work or other responsibilities. The Cubs are playing in the World Series, and if you're not familiar with sports news, narratives, well, it's kind of a big deal. We need all the support we can muster up. Thank you so much for your understanding. If you need a cute GIF tweeted to you, we are your Twitter account. Respectfully yours, the Cubs. I know.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect. Unemployment will be released later today. What are the expectations?
The expectations are for about 175,000 in new payroll jobs being created. The risk, though, is maybe on the downside a little bit here. And part of the reason for it is when you take a look at the manufacturing and the service indices that came out earlier this week, they were reporting a little bit lighter employment data. So the risk might be on the downside, but the more important thing to look at and one thing that we keep a very close eye on is wage growth. How much more am I making now versus a year ago? And that falls right into consumer spending. If I have more in my pocket, I can spend a little bit more. What we've seen from wage growth, it's been very tepid, 1.5%, maybe 2%. We'd like to see that north of 3% in order for really consumer spending to pick up and keep the economy going.
The election is next week. A lot of people looking forward to that ending. Hopefully it will end next week. These elections, these last decade or so, have gone on far further than we would have expected. But changes in the markets, are we starting to see any weaknesses that might persist beyond the election?
You know, it's hard to say, and the handicapping of the economy is one thing. Handicapping an election is something completely different. If you take a look at the markets, they're down now 8 days in a row. Not a huge decline, about 3% or so, which is not out of the ordinary. What's going to be important, though, I think more than the presidential election, is going to be the makeup of Congress. Because no matter what program either candidate decides they want to try to implement, it's still going to have to make its way through Congress. They're going to have to work with Congress. And I think that's going to be a little bit more important to take a look at that makeup, more so than who the president's going to be.
Gotcha. Before I let you go, I want to switch gears a bit and talk about retirement preparedness on the heels of the Prudential survey out this week. Nothing rings truer than the phrase, the sooner the better, and yet people are holding off on their future selves by holding off on savings for retirement. What's your advice for consumers at any age to start putting money away?
Oh, absolutely. The sooner the better. I mean, you get the effect of compounding. It works to your advantage. You know, if you get into the job market in your early 20s, 401k, get into it. You get matching generally from a lot of companies. And what you find, though, once you get started doing that, you don't miss the money. So start small.
True.
Start small. And then as you get raises each year, go ahead and increase that amount that you're putting away. Because, again, you're not going to necessarily miss it. So pay yourself
first. If you don't see it, you're not going to miss it.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management. Thanks for joining us this morning.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It is Dave Plyer in for Steve Grzanich this morning on this early Friday morning, the fourth day of November 2017. Ed Conard, he's the New York Times bestselling author, American Enterprise Institute visiting scholar, and former Bain Capital partner, has a new book out. It's called The Upside of Inequality, How Good Intentions Undermine the Middle Class. Ed has made over 150 media appearances, including The Daily Show. That's how I first saw Ed. Various shows on Fox Business, CNBC, among others. And this morning, Ed joins us on The Opening Bell. Good morning to you, Ed.
Good morning.
Great to have you on the show this morning. When you first wrote the book, Unintended Consequences, you set the record straight on the financial crisis of 2008. And now here is a book on income equality. It's a very hot topic in the upcoming election.
It sure is. I think you see a lot of frustration by the middle and working class and lining up behind, probably both candidates and Bernie Sanders as well, because we have seen changes in our economy that we haven't fully factored into our thinking, accounted for, and affected our economic policy fully yet.
You obviously hear it a lot from the Democratic side, and you argue that many of the things Washington does to address income equality, higher taxes on the rich, regulation, entitlements, only slows down the growth, which makes the problem worse.
Yeah, I think I make an argument in the book that there's a very long-term effect from income inequality, which is you get a lot of motivation from your most talented people to get the training that grows the economy and to take the entrepreneurial risks. And what we've seen in the United States is the formation of a deep pool of highly trained, highly motivated talent. We've grown our employment twice as fast as Germany and France, three times faster than Japan at median incomes, which are 15 to 30% higher. And we've done that. If you look at the number of high-scoring workers, we have about a 25% of our workers score in the top third internationally versus 45% that score in the bottom third. So we have about one high-scoring worker for every two low-scored workers. In Germany, it's 1-to-1. In Scandinavia, it's 2-to-1, and in Japan, it's 3-to-1. They have almost six times as many high-skilled or high-scoring workers per low-skilled worker, and yet we've been able to grow our economy much faster than theirs and grow our keep our income significantly higher than theirs.
Well, you note, you know, when America spreads talent and entrepreneurial risk-taking over a greater number of workers, it does slow down the middle and working class productivity, and it slows down wage growth.
I believe that it does. I think we've been telling workers that I worked in that. I was an engineer at Ford Motor Company. I worked in that plant in the south side of Chicago, and you know, we tell those workers, and that plant's still there, fortunately. But we moved that plant to Mexico, and we tell the workers, "Don't worry, the entrepreneurs are coming. They're going to put you back to work. They're going to compete, drive your wages up. There's a capital sitting on the sidelines at zero interest rates. They're going to invest. That's going to increase your productivity." And all that worker sees is that the talent moved out to California and outsourced their jobs to China, and that the engineers who are left behind are working on products and factories that are employing Mexican workers. And they say, where are the entrepreneurs who are coming to put me back to work?
Right.
They don't see it. And we don't put forward an economic policy or discussion of it. We don't even acknowledge that it's true.
Well, let's start with the most popular myths about income equality that you talk about in the book and the economy. Number one is the rich get richer by making the poor poorer.
Yeah. Well, I do. You know, I think there is this view that the economy is a zero-sum game, so it's simply a negotiation between the rich and the poor as to who gets what share of the pie. But I think we know quite well at the high end of the wage scale, it's a little bit like mining for gold. You can go out and find new innovations like the iPhone or Facebook or Google mm-hmm. that substantially increase the pie for everyone, and a lot in our knowledge-based, information-based economy is really being driven at the highest end in Silicon Valley and in the technological frontier, which is the key to growing our economy. So at that end, and I think there's a lot of evidence as well, if we look at the turnover in the Fortune 500, it's turning over faster. If we look in tech companies, it's turning over even faster. The 15 largest tech companies in 2000 are down about 60% in value. If it wasn't for Microsoft, they'd be down even more. There's a complete new set of competitors. If you look at the Forbes 400, it's never had as many self-made billionaires in it. It's almost 70%. Of the people on the list, the churn in the Forbes 400 is higher. And if we were misallocating resources on the level that would be required to account for inequality, we should expect the U.S. to be slowing down
sure.
relative to other high-wage economies. We see it accelerating since the early 1990s.
Well, then you mentioned the myth that incentives don't matter. And again, you say accelerated U.S. growth is relative to other high-wage economies with more equally distributed incomes. This risk-taking is important.
Yeah, I think if you look in the short run, it's probably true that if you increase the tax rate, it doesn't have a big effect. And the same thing is true if Europe cuts its tax rate, it's not going to immediately grow because it hasn't developed the institutions like Silicon Valley, which are needed to grow in our current economy. But if you look over the long run, what you see is that entrepreneurial risk-taking has created companies like Google and Facebook. They give our employees much better on-the-job training, more valuable training. They coalesce into communities like Silicon Valley that are have synergistic benefits. They create communities of venture capitalists who really know the technology and are more skillful investors than most investors are. And the combination of those things slowly over decades have made our most productive workers way more productive than the rest of the world, and our growth would be even faster if they weren't sharing disproportionately in the U.S. made innovation that that our workers have created. And we have done that with a relatively smaller pool of the highest skilled workers in the U.S.
And one of the other myths is that mobility has declined.
Yes, if you look at mobility, what you find is that one of the landmark studies done by Harvard a couple years ago said that mobility has not declined in the United States. It's been relatively stable over the last 100 years. If you actually look at absolute mobility, the probability that you can earn, say, $50,000 or $100,000, it's actually gone up. When you compare mobility to Scandinavia, for example, the most mobile, or at least the most equally distributed incomes in the world, you find it identical for everyone but the bottom 20% in the United States, same in the U.S. as Scandinavia. If you look at the bottom 20%, mobility for white Americans is the same as Scandinavians. It's less for African Americans. And what you do when you dig into that is you find that their mobility very much parallels a single motherhood and high school dropouts, which kill mobility for all demographics, all races, all income groups, has a very large detrimental effect. So it looks like that effect, which is not an economic effect, it's really a sociological effect, seems to be the biggest impact on that very small piece of the overall picture.
Now, you also talked about the myth that technology hollows out the middle class. And I got to tell you, I'm not a fan of big government, and that's what we have today. There's so many restrictive regulations that are out there. You've noted that, you know, it doesn't seem like regulations that have been put in place have made the banking system more stable. And what it's done really is made it different and difficult for the average homeowner to borrow money.
Without a doubt. There's a recent Larry Summers, famous economist, used to be the head of Harvard, Larry Summers study that looks at the volatility of bank stocks and looks at the riskiness of banks and says that the regulation has had almost no effect. All it really has done, I agree with you, is that if we make the banks hold more equity, that's no different than, you know, somebody's going to pay for that. Who's going to pay for that? The customer or the bank? That's really a homeowner, a middle-class homeowner who's borrowing money. So it's a little bit like saying you got to put a bigger down payment down, or at least you have to pay the price of a bigger down payment. They can't afford it, so they don't get the credit. And we've seen a lot of shrinkage in credit, in lower credit rating groups. It's really only the highest groups that have been able to get mortgages in this market. So that's definitely had an effect. But if you look over the long run, and I did hire some census consultants to dig through the census data for me, you see almost no change in the distribution of income in the middle income. In fact, if you break it into demographics, you see that white full-time workers have seen their income shift up, so have African-American, and so have Hispanic workers. There's an interesting Pew study that says there's been a 11-point hollowing out of the middle class. It's 7 points of upward movement, 4 points of downward movement. If you dig into the 4 points, 3 of those is from an influx of low-skilled Hispanic workers. So really, if you look at Americans, it's 7 points up, 1 point down. I think we would take that hollowing out.
Well, great insight, terrific book. The Upside of Inequality, How Good Intentions Undermine the Middle Class. The author is Ed Conard. Ed, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us this morning, and have a great weekend.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning to you once again. It's Dave Plyer in for Steve Grzanich this morning from the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Down futures are pointing down. The S&P and NASDAQ futures also were pointing down. Oil trading up this morning. And now for the latest on commodities and agriculture is my friend Orion Samuelson. Good morning to you, Orion.
Hello, good morning, David. We are looking at an up and down market for agricultural commodities this week. One day it'll be hog futures down, next day it'll be cattle futures, and as we're approaching the end of a harvest of a record corn and soybean crop, we're just not finding much movement as far as the prices in the wheat, corn, and soybean market. But the demand keeps on coming because export sales of U.S. soybeans this week, 2.5 million tons. And we exported 1,470,000 tons of corn. Both of those numbers coming in above expectations. And so we saw a little bit of a bounce in the grain market yesterday in the November soybean contract up 3 cents a bushel, the December corn contract up 1.75. Wheat export sales continued to disappoint, so that market moved a little bit lower yesterday. Live cattle and hog futures yesterday, profit-taking came into the market. And so we saw prices tend to move lower there in live and lean hog futures, live cattle, and feeder cattle. But, David, I'm looking forward to a busy weekend. In about an hour, I'll be flying off to Kansas City, where the 20th gathering, the 20th annual gathering of the Agriculture Future of America takes place. These are college-age students. They would be the equivalent of college FFA. And so they're coming from universities all over the country, taking a look at job opportunities and what career paths to follow. And so we'll spend this afternoon and tomorrow morning there, and then we come back. And an interesting fundraising at Napier Settlement in Naperville, Illinois, where they're
Max,
doing a lot of work educating people on what agriculture means and what it does. So Max Armstrong and I will be on stage there tomorrow evening helping the Napier Settlement people raise funds for their new agricultural technology center.
Wonderful. That sounds like fun. Are you thrown like I am that we're, you know, playing baseball in November and now they're lighting the tree at Macy's tomorrow morning? I mean, it's just all melding together a little awkwardly, you know?
Well, and then we have to throw the Cubs celebration in there along with it. So
that's
it's,
right.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. And, you know, earlier this week I was in San Diego, California. I saw Cub caps all over the airport. And
awesome.
Cubs were the topic of conversation. So, but, yeah, although every year doesn't it get earlier that
it
we
does.
Start celebrating Christmas.
It does. It absolutely does. Thank you, Ari, and have a great weekend, pal.
You too, David.
All right. Now the Associated Bank market outlook for Thursday, November 4th, 2016. Here's what we're going to be following today. The Labor Department releases employment data for October at 8:30. The Commerce Department releases international trade data for September as well. That's going to happen at 8:30 this morning. Berkshire Hathaway reports quarterly earnings after the market close. And automaker BMW releases third quarter earnings figures as well.